Our leadoff guest is William O'Connor, senior editor and writer for The Daily Beast, and his latest work is about our community. Strippers, insane asylums, assassination, and termites inside the insane history of the world's greatest White House replica. Good morning to you, William O'Connor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, how in the world did you get immersed in this project? It's a long piece, by the way, brilliantly written, but how did you get interested in this?
Sure. So I kind of write these long travel features for the Daily Beast, and I was down in Louisiana back in January, and a good friend of mine had just moved to Baton Rouge, and she was like, I know you. You got to go. You got to check it out. And she was 100% right.
What did you think when you first saw the building?
I laughed. You know, I was standing on, I think it's North Boulevard, and I had walked from the Greyhound bus station. I had taken the bus from New Orleans, and you know, you see pictures of it, you read a little bit here and there about it, although there really hasn't been very many, much written about it, sort of contemporary news accounts. And it really does. You know, you look at it and you're like, yep, there's no mistaking it.
And Huey Long had designs, as we know, on the White House. And on March 7th, 1929, the governor's mansion was rendered to nothing, as you report. More than a nub of a foundation in the dirt, nothing more than a foundation, a nub of a foundation. It was a building that had great reverence prior to the current one. There was some controversy at the time about what Huey was doing. How did he get the old one removed and the new one built?
Well, it's one of those typically great Huey Long stories. You know, he basically at first complained that there were rats and that there was termites and everything. And he actually got a building inspector to declare that it was dilapidated and needed to be replaced. But needless to say, his opponents didn't really want to pay for Huey Long to get a new mansion. And so he actually waited until they were out of session, and he did it by mail ballot and kind of heard only from, I think, 2/3 of the state legislators. And he took that as good enough for him to tear it down. And this actually became one of the accounts against him in the impeachment proceedings was about the governor's mansion. But in kind of the best Long fashion, in the middle, he calls up the state warden at Angola State Prison and says, send me over some guys from the prison. And he takes the chain gang of guys from the old state capitol, which in and of itself is a whole, is also something well worth seeing, and marches them down in the middle of the night to start tearing down the old governor's mansion.
And that they did, and the new one was built, and Huey eventually moved in, but he didn't live there long, did he?
No, he didn't. And he, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, when you talk about Huey's motivations, even after it was built, he didn't actually spend a lot of time. He preferred hotels, and his wife spent very little time there, most likely because of Huey's long rumored relationship with his secretary, who he later made Secretary of State. And so actually the lawn that spent the most time there, and if you ask me, probably is the more colorful of the two, although the less dangerous, was Earl.
Yeah, he was governor for a lot longer than his brother, who was a United States Senator when he was killed in 1935. And you note that the old governor's mansion has stood empty as far as housing governors since 1963. It's now where Preserve Louisiana is located. But governors now live right off the interstate in a building that's much less opulent. When you walked in, what did you first think of the old governor's mansion?
The opening room after you walk through the front doors is kind of a beautiful oval room with the curving staircase going up, and that room is very beautiful, and there are a number of rooms that are very beautiful. I think, you know, the room that's the most ostentatious I wasn't necessarily a fan of, which is the East Room, which is used as the ballroom. But you definitely get, you know, it's not an exact copy of the White House. It is. You know, a facsimile of the White House.
Yeah.
But there are rooms that remind you of rooms in the White House. And so that's kind of the feeling you get as you go through at least the state rooms on the first floor.
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with William O'Connor, senior editor and writer for the Daily Beast. His latest work is a long feature about the old governor's mansion that's still open on North Boulevard in our community. And you note that as White House replicas go, this one is probably the most impressive, but there are a few others around the country as well.
Yeah, sure. I think so. What makes this one the most impressive is definitely the stories behind it, which is why I think everybody who has the time should tour it. And obviously a lot of people consider Huey Long really important and relevant to today's political conversation. But there are a number, I live in Washington, D.C., and McLean, Virginia, which is right outside the city, which is kind of the McMansion capital of this region, has a couple of them. Atlanta has one with an exact replica inside of it of the Oval Office from the George W. Bush era. Houston has one. Dallas has one. And then there's two kind of famous ones, in one in China and one actually in Iraq. That I just kind of, when I was looking this up, there's just actually a number of them that people actually want to have a copy of the White House as their home.
Well, his brother Earl was governor for a lot longer than was Huey, and you note that Earl did some wild and crazy things in that building.
He did. I mean, well, he kind of literally lost his mind. You know, when you think about some of the crazier things that happened in American politics, a sitting governor's wife getting him institutionalized, and then him escaping her, getting him institutionalized again, him then firing the people who are in charge of the state mental health board, and then hiring new people who declare him sane. They kind of don't get much more colorful than that. And I mean, and Earl just, I mean, any number of things Earl did that was colorful. And, you know, later on, as his affair with Blaze Starr becomes kind of more pronounced, you have the stories of that, you know, his last night in the mansion, they threw a party for her, that when Charles de Gaulle, the French president, visited New Orleans, that Earl had the car take a little detour to go by the place where she danced and worked. So he definitely was an interesting character for sure.
Here's a question from a listener, Tom, who asks if Jimmy Davis, who I think was the last governor to live there, did he have his horse occupy the building at any point?
So that was what I was told, that yes, he did bring his horse inside the mansion. Yes.
Well, it's a building with great historical relevance, and fortunately, it has been preserved. But it is definitely a sign of Huey's ambition. And there are those today, William, who are comparing our current president to Huey Long in some ways. You did a lot of research about the Kingfish prior to writing this piece. Do you see any similarities between President Trump and Huey Pierce Long?
Sure, of course. There, you know, it would be foolish to say that there aren't, in terms of let's say, a strain of kind of populism that they tap into. I'd say there are some significant differences just after having spent a ton of time reading about Huey. I mean, I think regardless of what your politics are about the current president, I'd say he attracted some people who may not typically have voted for the Republican Party or voted at all in the election, with the idea that he was going to be different and deliver on, let's say, some of these populist issues. And I think you see some people already kind of criticizing him for not having done that. Whereas Huey, you know, while he didn't do as much as he said he was going to do, and he's certainly very controversial, you know, he did get the free textbooks. He did get the highways built. You know, he did build hospitals. He did build schools. And so I think there's that part. And I think there's a level of deviousness to Huey that, I mean, you know, you have the, you know, when he was going to run for president, he told his people, he said, I'm not going to win in 36. You know, my goal is to have FDR lose, a Republican take office, the economy continue being crap, and so therefore the country is going to be ready for a far left guy in 40. Or you have the situation where some black politicians in Louisiana went to him and complained about the new hospital not having any black nurses. And Huey says, all right, I'm going to solve it for you, but you're not going to like how I'm going to do it. And the way he does it is he actually goes around making a stink about white nurses having to treat black patients. And so, and it kind of stirs up racial resentment so that he gets black nurses hired. You know, so there's a level of deviousness there.
He's talking about the old governor's mansion on North Boulevard, which was started in 1929 when Huey Long had the previous mansion torn down. That one had been around for a long time. I think about 75 years, William. It was a venerable building in its own right, wasn't it?
Yeah, he said there's too many clocks and the rats are running around, and he tried to get them all in the same time, and then the rats got in the clocks and they were making too much noise. You know, and it's definitely one of those kind of Huey Long, there's probably some truth to it, but he made a great story out of it.
Well, it's a fine work, and congratulations. I suspect you had to spend a little bit of time here to unearth all the nuggets that you have reported on in this story.
Oh, yes, definitely. And then, you know, and anybody who's interested in Long, I mean, there are two kind of the greatest books of American nonfiction. You have T. Harry Williams' biography of him, which won the Pulitzer, actually. And then A.J. Liebling, who's kind of this forgotten New Yorker great, he wrote a book about Earl and Huey called The Earl of Louisiana, which were both, you know, if you're looking to dive into this time period, are both excellent jumping off points.
Thank you, William O'Connor. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.